Got a Vente Pulverize for creative disturbance.
Okay, so I have been really curious about getting to know the motivation and the gut feeling that the international students feel when they're coming to the United States. And I'm here with Shruti Shripathi, who is a master's student studying applied cognition and neuroscience with me, specializing in human-computer interaction. So Shruti, tell me a little bit about your background from India, where you come from, and why did you make the decision to come to the United States, and specifically UTD?
So I got an undergraduate degree in computer science engineering. I had no clue what I wanted to do before that, so I just took what every other Indian does, become a computer science engineer. After that, I worked for 2 years at SAP Labs India. So I'm from Bangalore, and I worked again in Bangalore at SAP Labs for 2 years as a software developer, and I realized that I wasn't enjoying it as much as I thought I might. So I was kind of exploring on what other options I have in the same field, but you know, kind of deviating a little bit, mixing it up with other fields. So my manager, the then manager, her name is Paramita Biswas, she introduced me to the topic of design thinking, and she kind of encouraged me to take some courses on design thinking, which got me interested in the whole topic of UX and human-computer interaction. So then I started looking for what opportunities I have in this field, and I thought it might be a good start to get a higher education or study human-computer interaction in more detail. So I started looking for universities that offer courses similar to what I'm studying here, that's HCI.
Okay.
There were like quite a few universities that had like really good programs, but for the GRE score that I had and the kind of educational background and work experience that I have, UTD seemed to be more appropriate. So, which is why I thought it might be a good option to kind of come here and study the field.
Okay. Along with us, we have Ritvik Kaikani, who's doing his master's in ATEC as well. And Ritvik, so you have a background in engineering as well, right?
Yeah. So everyone in India wants to do, everyone in India, it's a usual joke that in India, first you do a bachelor's in engineering and then you do what you want in life. So it's like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's like a certificate to get out in the world, right? So everyone wanted to do engineering. Even I had the same thing. I studied a lot of science, did my 11th and 12th. I was very interested in getting into pure science, but I was not encouraged into doing that because everyone said no jobs in pure science. And everyone scares you saying there's no jobs in pure science. And the whole part is all of the Indian population is now getting into engineering. So I did the same. I went into mechanical engineering, did my bachelor's in that. And 4 years, I didn't learn shit because, pardon my language, but I didn't learn shit.
Okay.
Because the professors were not as inviting, and they never connected with the students. It was always a one-way education where they imposed the students with reading textbooks. And so our education was basically just spitting out from textbooks and just getting our marks or scores.
Mm-hmm.
That we called our CGPA or GPA after our degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we used that CGPA to go around and search for jobs. And there were no jobs at all in India because, of course, it's populated. And so I went around and I did this random job called risk engineering in the insurance industry for 7 months. And that frustrated me to the core because I understood what a corporate job was.
Uh-huh.
And it was just wearing your formal clothes and walking inside the office. And that whole feeling just, that whole experience just pushed me into the other side of my interest because I'm a musician too. So I did, I wanted something which mixed both my music interests, my sound interests, and what I love about films, because I grew up watching world movies with my dad, with my mom. And I had a lot of these interests in my mind, and I didn't want to let go of them at any point in my life.
Yeah.
I wanted them all close to me, and at the same time, I loved science too. like science was everywhere for me, and I loved watching everything in BBC and all this Discovery, and we used to always watch everything, and so science was always a fascination. So for me, it was not the education to come to the US was not basically to get out of the country or to find better opportunities. It was just because there were not any multidisciplinary programs inside India.
So
my sister's PhD advisor put me in touch with these few programs, and he told me, especially look at A-Tech, look at what Roger Molina is doing inside the Artsci lab. Then he told arts and technology is a good field for you because you like both, doing both. So I specifically applied only to this program, and somehow only this program, I just got the letter, and I was shocked initially, and then I was really happy, but then after a while, that happiness turned into so much tension, because your whole life, I think 1 month or 2 months before you come here or apply for a visa to come here, goes in your loan sanctioning and your loan.
Yes. You went through the same process.
You went through the same thing, so you can tell your experience.
Yeah. That was like such a pain in the excuse my language. So I think I got my acceptance somewhere in May, or probably, yeah, I think it was March, April, May, somewhere around that time. And yeah, we started looking for the bank that offers, like, you know, the best interest, and where we could kind of get the loan, because we were just kind of calculating how much money I can put from my pocket and what my parents can offer. And
right.
Yeah, and because it's very expensive, like right now, the currency value is like $1 is almost equal to 60 rupees.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a lot of money that you have to kind of think about before you move to this country or, you know,
so then,
invest in it.
So you had to take out loans to come and study here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's kind of bizarre, but it, like, people told me that if you, when you go for like visa interviews, if you're showing that you have enough money for you to like sponsor it by yourself without a loan, your visa won't get sponsored.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's better to take a loan and come here and study. So
and so there's this first phase of you getting excited about getting to come here and study, and there's this second phase of tension at home because your parents are removing a loan for you.
Yeah.
And you would realize that, oh my God, my parents are going to put so much money and I don't have anything in my pocket to contribute. And sometimes you have to, of course, you have to put a mortgage, you have to put your house on mortgage, you have to put stuff on sale just in case for the loan as a security. And
right.
Then the third stage is silly to me, because the third stage is everyone telling you how your visa interview is going to be. Which is what I feel should be, it's a big taboo in India right now, because it's a visa interview, and people over prepare you so much for it before going and facing this guy behind the glass, and you have to just answer a few questions to him about your program, and people who don't know English or don't know how to speak it or don't know how to communicate well, they struggle at this, and sometimes I think the visa officers are a little cruel and they just reject these people based on the miscommunication that they have in that 10 minutes of whatever visa interview, because there are so many people on the line.
Yeah.
And because of this, there are certain agencies which help in just preparing for an interview. And these people just go inside these agencies to learn how to face a 10-minute interview to just get a visa
to
come.
So, wait, let me get this straight. So, there are agencies that are preparing people to go for an interview, which is like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Yes. Which is a simple visa interview.
So did you guys use one of those agencies to help you kind of get there, or?
No, I just use the resources who kind of went there and got their information. I just asked them.
Okay.
The thing was the study of focus itself is like very different from engineering, because a lot of Indian students who come here are like engineers.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of question they ask is, like, people were telling, they'll ask you engineering, like computer science related questions in your visa interview. I was like,
that's if they know computer science, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the immigration officers don't always have an engineering background.
No.
Yeah.
It's like,
but
tell me C-sharp. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it is like that.
Interesting.
And that's how these guys, sometimes the agency sometimes scare you to the extent that you just fumble at your interview. That you prepare, over prepare yourself technically, and they're like, oh, they didn't ask me this. They didn't ask anything about this. And then some people are randomly chosen out of the crowd, apparently, and I've seen a few friends just...
Yeah.
These questions are really stupid for me because it takes a lot for an international student to get through the application process, get accepted, be happy that he's going to be studying. And in the last phase of them just checking whether you're valid to enter the country or not, they test you on such random technical questions, which is not related to who you are or what you want to study.
Yeah.
And it's like, for an example, if I'm the visa officer sitting on the other side and I see that this guy has bachelor's in electrical engineering, he will just go to his computer and Google some random concept and type electrical engineering and pick out one question and throw it at that guy's face.
Okay.
And this guy's face will be like, he'll fumble and he just takes it.
Yeah.
And this guy just takes it as, this guy is not confident enough to go and study in the country. And sometimes it's a rejection like that. So I don't know, that's a randomized technique that they use. But the biggest problem here is basically anticipation. It's you're making the student so scared in anticipating these questions that they basically look for body language and confidence in front of this interview, that you are be able to communicate in the country and be safe, right?
I see. Okay.
That is the actual agenda of that interview. But they prepare themselves so much that these guys are like, the students are so scared, they stand in front and they just start melting away when all these questions are thrown at them. So it's like, that's one issue. And then after you get your visa, after you get accepted, you get your visa too, it's a happy stage and you book your tickets. And then even you would have faced it. I was in 8th arts and technology, and everyone that was coming to UTD was going to business analytics and JSOM.
JSOM
is filled with people who want to do business, and everyone is inside business.
I think you are the only student that's an international Indian student in this program.
In the program, yes.
Yeah.
And I figured that
I was surprised to see that he was an A-Tech student.
Yeah.
Even I
know?
Was. When I met him initially, I was like surprised. Like you were the only person that I knew.
And that was the problem with that was I didn't know anyone who was going to this university, UTD. And I didn't know anyone. I thought there were a lot of people going inside the program. So I didn't know there was a WhatsApp group that existed from India. I didn't know there was a Facebook group that existed. Because you got to figure out, after you get accepted for visa, you've got to figure out housing. You got to figure out where you're staying. You got to figure out living expenses. Because sometimes you got to come in. You need to come in with the thought that you don't get a part-time job here. So if you come in with that thought, you got
to
keep it.
Because you're not allowed to work here, right? While you're a student?
We are allowed to work here on part-time.
On campus.
On campus. But
so
not
you can't
everyone
get
gets
any
it.
Outside jobs.
Yes.
Okay.
You can't get any outside jobs. And that is, I think, one more downfall to the policy here.
Okay.
Because the number of students coming here itself is so much. And
how
can you give every one of them a sustainable
job? An on-campus job.
And it's not feasible. So somehow these guys have to sustain themselves and they have to... I was lucky because I entered A-Tech and I met Roger, and this lab, the whole A-Tech building was very, there are very few people, and it's a new building and there are very few people going inside. But for the people in the business building, it's a mess because they go inside and they come to know, this is like India itself. Everyone is there. Everyone is, there's already 50 people before you. It's like that.
So I took one engineering class, computer science class. And the number of people in one class was like close to 50 to 60 people in the class.
Yeah.
Whereas if I take any class in like my school, behavioral and brain science, like there were hardly 12 to 13 students in a class. I was like, that's a lot of difference, you know, like, and half of the people who are in the engineering school are like international students. So it's like the classroom is filled with Indians or like Asians or whatever, international students.
Yeah.
And you don't get to experience, like, you know, coming abroad and studying.
Yeah.
You're just spending more money to sit with the same people and just study the same thing. So
And
I see.
The main frustration I heard from all the people sitting in such classes was, abe, ye country mein kya kar rahe hain? You could have studied inside India itself.
Yeah.
India was the same. Apparently the professors who taught here for the 60-50 people were showing PowerPoint presentations just like how they were so some teachers are teaching us in India.
Yeah.
And so these guys were so frustrated. I could see their frustration. But we both, I think me and you, were lucky enough to get in a different building.
Yeah.
And our whole structure was so different. I was like, I was absorbed totally inside the program because I was like, oh, each student is given a special attention here. And we actually got. So actually,
yeah.
I feel I actually got what I wanted
yeah.
when I came here as an educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of things need to change on the financial perspective.
Yeah. So I think if you had to give advice to like the potential students that are considering to come here, would you recommend them to go to those agencies to prepare for the interview?
Definitely not.
Honestly, I wouldn't.
You would not recommend.
I mean, just be yourself, you know, just talk casually how you would. It's just another person who's asking you about yourself. Why do you want to go there? What do you want to do there? And what are your educational interests? What do you want to do after that? So it's as good as this person is interested to know what you want to do once you go to the other country or their country.
And so, for people who get tense about these interviews, I tell them it's not your end stop. It's not your last stop in your life. If you don't get an entry to this country, there are millions of countries to visit in this whole world.
Yeah.
It's not an end stop. Don't put it as an end stop because a lot of people just get depressed after an interview and they're like, we didn't get the visa. But that's not an end point. It's just a experience. You just move ahead with it. That's it. If you don't get it, you search for a different country. That's what I would say to people who have felt bad experiences in interviews and say, you got to be like this. So I think the repeated bad experiences have collected all these agencies together to pull out this agency and say, oh, let's teach children to go inside and teach them how to give an interview.
Yeah.
Instead, I would invest on building a website which tells them what to do, gives them resources on documentation,
on
how you write your documentations, like how I love the system of the tax system here because the tax online software that I just filled out had every instruction I needed. And it was all detailed on a website and it made it for me. And I didn't use anyone else's help. So that would be much better thing for the students to not get scared, I feel.
Yeah, and there are also like thousands of the students who are like kind of going through the same process. So it's like they can also kind of help you out and you can ask questions. How was their interview? You can get their advice instead of paying. Like, I don't know how much they charge.
They take a lot of money too. It's a different, it's like a, another
business for them.
So it's like a transporting business. We're transporting and the funny part is they advertise saying, We shipped 50,000 students this year.
Yeah.
We shipped 20,000 students to Australia this year.
You know, it's really interesting because India is going to be the strongest economy in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, at least I think so from the stats because the average age is, 35 right now? And everybody's studying engineering. So that that puts, so it seems like there's a relatively...
Provided they work for the country.
And then they're all getting shipped outside to study. And so I think that's really interesting. So what is, besides the process to get here, what became like the biggest shock factor when you came to the United States? Like, you know, your daily struggle for a student.
So initially when I was in India and I was planning myself to come here and study, I knew that there would be like a lot of expenses, but it didn't hit me until I actually paid my money for the rent. And I was like, damn, that's a lot of money I'm losing.
So you have like a monthly calculation of how much you will spend per month and you took that out in loans, right?
Yeah.
And the worst part is so much, I think 80% or 90% of the time is spent in discussing how much you're paying for the college and how you're going to get here, how you're going to book your tickets, how you're going to do this. Everything is, 90% of your time is spent in deciding that from all these people telling you advice.
Yeah.
But 10% of the time is just, you're supposed to balance out understanding how your living situation is going to be here instead of worrying about how you get here. How you get here is just a small investment.
Uh-huh.
After you come here, if you have a beforehand knowledge of how much you're going to spend on a monthly basis on what, and you get a very detailed account of, oh, if you go to Walmart, you buy bread for this much, you buy drinks for this much, you buy Pepsi for this much, you buy juice for this much. You have a detailed account of what you're going to face before you get a shocker value. Like you go inside Walmart, you're like, what? I'm paying 120 rupees for two bananas or three bananas, which is like, ₹10 in India.
Okay.
When you go on a card, you get
so,
10 rupees. Like,
so this is, I guess you can, this is if you guys are willing to share this information. So what's like a ballpark number that, if there's a student in India considering University of Texas, Dallas, coming in as an international student, what should they take out, you know, for their living expenses month-to-month base? Like, what are you, including rent, transportation, phone, and all that stuff, you know, to give them a figure, I guess.
Initially, I think the way that I calculated it came up to like $400 or something.
Oh gosh, $400?
Yeah, but in reality, it's like it goes up to $500 and you know, it depends, like there's like unexpected expenses that happen. So one,
that's including rent?
Yeah, that's including rent. So the fun, the
and that is
the frustrated,
that is if you, that is if you share.
Okay.
So so there's two different pictures here. So if this person who wants to come here badly wants his own bedroom and his own space.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, what I wanted, because I didn't want to disturb all my roommates, because I, of course, I had two speakers. Because
you're a musician
and
you're loud.
I didn't want to disturb anyone. So
yeah.
I came in with the thought that it's going to be very easy to get just a one room and a bathroom.
Right.
I don't even care if I get a kitchen inside the room.
Uh-huh.
I just need a room which has an space of itself, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to. So one is considering if you're sharing, which I definitely advise for all the students coming in initially for a first year. You definitely got to share your rooms with your other people or whatever friends you have or a student, or definitely share, because that's how you're gonna learn how your expenses are going to be, and it's going to give you a warm-up value of how you're going to be if you're living independently.
Yeah.
And that happened to me, because I shifted, I lived on with four other people, five people in a two-bedroom apartment.
Yes.
And both of them shared two bedrooms, and I lived in the hall, and apparently, and I was not on the lease or whatever, that's how we live. So all this happens.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. This is the true picture. Just giving everyone. So there's possibility of living in houses anyhow, and the way you maximize on it is you make it cheap for the first year, so you understand how you're gonna survive if you live on your own for the next year. So yeah, now I'm living in a one bedroom, and I know I'm spending around $700 to $800 per month on just living and food expenses and rent to combine. And that is also crunching all the things, like trying to curb all the temptations that you have. Like that is one thing you learn as an international student coming here. You gotta curb whatever you used to do in India, which is freak out, go inside pubs, go crawl, go have fun, right? That's, you gotta curb all that here, because it's here, it's a different picture.
Okay.
So it's
and speaking about rent, so when they market like how much the rent is, they don't tell you about like utilities and other expenses. So they say like, you know, you pay around $1,200 or something for the rent, but there's plus utilities, like depending on how much water you use and all the things that comes there. And initially I kind of planned that, okay, so I'll be sharing my house with, you know, my roommates, and my expenses will come up to like so and so and all that. Then when I came here to actually sign my lease and everything, they asked, this particular apartment complex is horrible. Okay, so and it's very close to like UTD campus, so like students generally prefer to stay there. So when I got there to actually go sign my lease, this lady, she asked me that you also had to pay like a deposit of another $1,200.
Wow.
Yeah, just in case I break something in their house. And on
so
top of that,
and
they,
how much is that
they,
in
and
Indian
and they
rupees?
You to give it, and they ensure you that they give it back.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I didn't get back a penny.
And you, the
wow.
Problem,
yeah, I didn't get back a penny.
So how much is that in Indian rupees? I'm just curious.
1,260.
Around 72,000?
72,000.
Wow.
72,
so that's
000.
Not a joke,
rupees,
right?
Rupees,
yeah.
Yeah. 72,000 rupees is like 3 or 4 months rent in India if you're living a house.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So you didn't get that back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's always like, and then you had to also get insurance, like house insurance and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an additional expense that goes every month, and then you had to pay for your electricity, Wi-Fi, and you know, telephone and all that, like if you're staying off campus, because it's very difficult to get into like on campus accommodation. At least when I joined, it was like really bad.
It is still difficult.
Why is it difficult to get on campus accommodation?
So they have a priority list or something like that. So there's like the scholar students gets the first priority, and then something, and then like the graduate students are like at the bottom. So unless
usually undergrads get it first, and usually they see locals, just like how you get a job too.
Oh, okay.
If companies in Dallas are searching for candidates, they search only for Dallas people first.
I got
you. So I think it's they give the rooms to the locals first, and then the international students come to the bottom tier, I think.
Yeah.
And because I kept checking on, I actually wrote a very heated up mail to the on campus authorities too, one saying you got I have and you're supposed to pay for that too. There's another deposit for just putting your name on the wait list, so you pay $200 to $300 to put your name on that wait list, and the wait list never you're still on the wait list, like you never
so you never get the money back.
You get the money back,
okay,
unless
you
unless you actually fight with them and say
okay,
give me
so
my
it's
money
like a
back
deposit, basically.
So it's like
I
a
gotcha.
deposit. So so you put you're paying them to put your name on that, and the problem is they'd never update you on the status, and they never say, oh, you're going to get, you might get it next month, you might get it next to next month. They never give a update.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is if you don't give an update, how are you going to leave your present accommodation? How are you going to say, hey,
yeah,
I need one person to replace me in this apartment to move to that apartment? So housing is one of the biggest problems that Indians and any international student face here.
Okay.
And it's a very, very, very big issue here and should be handled well. And I think like some it can be easily done if few people take an initiative and build a proper system where people who are flying from India or flying from any country know about the situation of what is available where and which apartment is good and what you're going to be facing.
It sounds like a great business opportunity, actually.
It is.
So somebody to work from here and coordinate with, you know, those agencies in India,
definitely.
So you can have housing available as soon as you get here.
Yes,
you
without
know?
The hassle of like put
and
we like do you remember temporary accommodation?
Yeah.
Right? So temporary accommodation is like 10 people living in a 2-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
10 people living in a 2-bedroom apartment. You're shoved into some random house, and the problem is all Indians are like, what? This is how you're going to live now in the US? Like, oh, geez, we thought it was a party.
It's a 24/7 party.
Yeah.
It's like everybody in the Artside Lab, living in the Artside Lab.
The Artside. Just like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it's like navigating, and you have extra walls because all the walls are like, your extra walls are basically all suitcases.
Yeah.
So you've got to navigate between suitcases.
So I think we provided very great insights, but in a negative light.
Yeah.
I think we should turn around and maybe say something positive to
yeah.
people that are thinking about
coming
to
here,
the United
yeah.
States and study
definitely.
Here.
Yeah.
You know? So, what are you guys thinking as far as any final advice
now,
and tips?
So, what we face negatively, what we spoke about negatively is in itself a life experience for us, because you finally understand how you got to take care of yourself independently, because it's not very common in India to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
Because the housing systems at work, the communities work differently there. The children are usually in their parents' homes till they're 20, 25, 26. So it's because the resources are less and the houses are less. It's not easily, you can't easily just walk out and say, hey, I want to live in this room today. Because it's not easily available there and takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
So the moment you move out of your comfort zone, you move out of your country, you realize that there isn't a possibility of taking care of yourself. And I think that is one of the biggest pluses I realized from coming here. So I learned how to take care of myself. I learned how to take care of the things that I need for myself in a different way. And probably even handling your finances, because the finances situation becomes very complicated. And because it's easy to very much easier to manage money in your own country. But when you come here, you got to be really, really, really careful, because you never know. And the moment a credit card comes in your hand, it's like... you can't tell anything about it. The credit cards are dangerous too. So,
I think the credit cards are dangerous for American students too.
Yes.
But
and I think the biggest plus point is the whole educational culture here. It's so encouraging and inviting.
Yeah.
And I think in the past 2 years, my mind has grown to crazy, like different exponentially because I met people who have been doing research or doing studies in different fields and trying to connect two different disciplines, which are so, which was so far-fetched for us back in our country, because we, whenever we used to approach our professors, we used to say, no, refer to this textbook. No, you're not doing this, right?
Yeah.
So here it's totally opposite. Here, this, the system of feedback is very much respected, where the teacher says, okay, I'm going to learn from my students today too.
Yeah.
The student is going to give me something today. So it's like the students have a lot more respect here. So I think people who are coming here will definitely love the educational experience.
Yeah, and me especially, I came out of my comfort zone. Like, I'm like far away from my comfort zone at this point because of the experience that I had here. So I'm kind of like an introvert person who kind of likes to be in a safe zone all the time, and I don't explore a lot. Like, that's how I was before. So when I came here, it was like, I'm alone here. There's like, I don't have a family who lives here, and I'm alone, and I had to make a decision for myself, good or bad, I should take care of myself. And I like, if something is wrong, I have to go and approach the person. I have to find who's the right person. I have to approach them and talk to them and get work done. So, you know, it's like, yeah, with my personality skills, I kind of improved a lot in like being more confident and talking to people. And the fact that I actually took a course that's much different than what most of the international students do, like engineering or management, that gave me a scope to actually meet, like how Ritwik said, it gave me an opportunity to meet with like really great professors at UTD. And I got an opportunity to also work with them and learn a lot from them. And it's, yeah, and also, like, I build a lot of network, and that's an important tip I would tell anyone who's, like, plans to come here and study. Find people who share your interest and network with them, and, like, share your knowledge as well, because it will help you to grow in the field and, like, put your name out there if someone is looking for a potential candidate for, you know, job and things like that. Like, you would be the person who they would contact, and you don't have to go to them, you know. It's kind of like that. So networking is like really important to do, which I learned that once I came here and I started living by myself. So yeah, that's definitely one thing.
Yeah, and that's a bit difficult for international students in Texas though, because Texas, the moment you land, you don't see people walking on the road. You're like, whoa, where did we come here? And it's like the population is so less and sparsed out, right?
Yeah.
And you want to meet people. How do you meet people? And everyone's like, dude, you got to get a car. And that's one of the things that always pissed me off in Texas. You got to get a car. You got to get a car, or else you won't meet people. You got to get a car, or else you won't meet people. But yeah, you can figure out your own ways. There's always public transport.
Yeah.
You can squeeze out your own time just to enjoy. It's a different experience. Yeah,
and there's also like a lot of clubs in UTD where they invite people from industry. There is one is UX club that's under ATEC, and there's also Women Who Compute and many other engineering groups as well, where they invite people from the industry to come and give a talk or conduct like hackathons and things like that. So it's a good opportunity to network with them and, you know, just spread your name out there.
I think most important advice is take care of your health. If you don't take care of your health, your wallet is going to become light very soon. Because the healthcare system is pretty tricky here, so I would advise everyone to just learn how to take care of
their health. The healthcare system is very expensive in the United States. Yeah, anybody can say healthcare is very expensive here. So I think we'll close in on this note.
Yeah.
I think this was very helpful. So thank you so much for that, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you. It was fun talking.
Got a bit tape over us for creative disturbance?